I just looked at him and I was like, I can't believe you're just going to let me
walk away.
Yeah. And before long, Phil Collins and I were commiserating about heartbreak, which he also went through recently.
I mean, I've just been through a marriage breakup, and you talk about New Year's Eve. I mean, my divorce was final on my birthday.
Oh, really?
And I didn't want it at all. So that's something that, you know, you always remember these things, you know, like you'll always remember New Year's Eve, and I'll always remember my birthday.
I know. It makes you want to skip those days, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Up until this conversation, I never thought I had much in common with Phil Collins. He started playing in Genesis at the age of 19. I didn't. He performed in Live Aid, while I only watched it on TV. He was in the movie Buster, which I never actually saw. But talking to him was easy. He told me that when he was in Genesis, he just played drums and sang. He didn't write. Against All Odds was one of the first songs he wrote himself when he was working on his first solo album.
That song particularly was written during my first divorce.
Mm-hmm.
My first wife and the kids had gone, and I was just left there. So it was written totally out of experience, as opposed to this is a what-if song, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Do you think you could have written that song if you hadn't gone through, if your wife hadn't left?
Probably not. I mean, frankly, if that personal stuff had not happened to me at that mm-hmm. time, I probably would never have made an album. And if I was to have made an album eventually, it would have been more of a jazz rock thing, because that was what I was actually, that was my output. Apart from Genesis, I was in a band called Brand X. And that's, you know, I was a player. So, you know, no, without that stuff, I wouldn't have felt the things I felt that made me sit at a piano night after night, day after day, writing stuff, you know.
Did it help?
Well, it helped in as much as, it was kind of, well, when she hears this, it's all going to be okay, you know.
Mm-hmm. Really? Is that what you thought?
I did, yeah. Foolish, huh? But, I mean, I did.
Did you get over it?
There's various people in your life that you never quite get over. I mean, that's kind of the cliche. And then, you know, sometimes, I mean, with me, for example, because of children, you are morally obligated, and you need, because of you want to be with the kids as much as possible, you have to be in touch with this person that's really hurt you. So it's not like, you know, you can just walk away and leave without a trace, because, you know, in this instance, there's a couple of little guys that are looking up to you saying, what am I going to do, Dad?
Okay, there are so many crazy things about this. First of all, even Phil Collins can't help but quote Phil Collins. Second, if it hadn't been for his wife leaving him in 1979, Phil Collins would never have become Phil Collins. Heartbreak turned a jazz rock fusion drummer into an international pop icon. But the other crazy thing was how honest and normal he was about it. Once again, Phil Collins put into words what I was feeling. There was a part of me, and it is not a small part, that wants my ex, Anthony, to hear the song I write and ask to come back. I told Phil that I'd been trying to write my songs, but they just didn't feel right. They were too wordy or something. But when I tried to consult songs that I loved to see how it was done, even the lyrics to the best songs looked flat on the page. I wanted to know how to transform cliched sentiment into a song that captured the entire range of human emotions. I wanted to know how simple sentences like love hurts, love scars, became.
Love hurts, love scars, love wounds and marks.
Most of the time it's the direct. I mean, if it's a good song, that's what makes it good. It's the fact that it's, you know, it's, you know, so many people try to fluff things up and or disguise them or make them a little bit too clever. But sometimes it's the simplest thing that actually reaches people.
Love you.
it actually looks corny when you look at it on the page.
Well, but then you see that that's what becomes important then is the way that it's sung, you know.
Yeah.
Because you get, you know, otherwise you get, and I don't mean any disrespect, but you get into sort of Michael Bolton territory. and I've got nothing, I'm just using him as an example. I'm sure people would use me as an example of something that, you know, like gets overblown and polished,
right,
as opposed to a simple idea, simply sung, and obviously sounds like it's sung with conviction.
So now I had the advice. I had the pain. It was time to start writing. It was pretty terrifying at first. Every single word I put down seemed wrong, even the ones that seemed like they had to go in, the no-brainers. I'd type the word love, then erase it, and then type it again. Then, one day I was waiting for the train, and I started thinking about how that train reminded me of Anthony, and then how our love was sort of like a runaway train. Oh, that's good, I thought, and scribbled the line down in the back of my gas bill. Suddenly, heartbreak was flowing out of the cracks in the sidewalk, and it was up to me to transform it into song. The next problem was, and it felt like a small problem really, was my complete lack of musical ability. So I asked a guy named Joe McGinty for some help. He's a New York musician who has played with everyone from the Ramones to Ryan Adams to Ronnie Spector. He was in the Psychedelic Furs. He has a million songs. More importantly, for my purposes at least, Joe is a man who understands heartbreak. Here's one of his songs I really like.
This song is 3 weeks old. Guess I should sing it, happy birthday. And your image, it still holds. A happy accident, I can't seem to shake you from my mind.
Hi.
Anybody else?
Glad I got that.
So I met up with Joe and also Julia Greenberg, a musician and songwriter who plays with Joe a lot. I'd written about a dozen songs, some of them more finished than others. When I printed them out, I had 6 freshly typed pages of lyrics, and then about 15 crazy-looking pages, with a few lines here and there separated by random spaces. I had sent these all off to Joe and Julia before our meeting. Here's Joe reading the one I thought was farthest along.
Okay, imaginary boyfriend. I can't help but think this all could have been prevented if I'd just gone to a small liberal arts school, because then I would have met my imaginary boyfriend at a stand-up comedy open mic. It was love at first eye roll. He said he drew comic books like David on Roseanne.
Wow.
Most nights we stay.
I thought I'd been working on a song, but I don't even know how to describe what that was. A creative writing class essay, maybe. It was clear that I'd ignored Phil Collins' advice. Keep it simple, not clever. Joe and Julia agreed.
No. I think the like David on Roseanne, I can't turn into a song.
Then Julia pulled out her favorite of my songs from the very bottom of the stack. I had been so sure it wasn't a contender that I'd almost not included it at all.
You had the lyric, it doesn't do me any good, in fact, it does me bad. Then it kind of seems impossible to me that that hasn't been in a pop song before, but like that's a classic kind of pop song, you know.
That's a classic
pop song line.
I have to admit I was skeptical. That lyric was from the crazy pile. Just notes for an idea I had for a torch song. I tried to think of the most pathetic scenario I could. What I came up with was this. Anthony goes back to his ex-girlfriend. But rather than letting him go, I agree to be this awkward third wheel, as long as it means still getting to see him occasionally. The lines were literally, I liked you, and you liked her, and I sort of liked her because you liked her. Julia had run with the idea, with one minor change.
You know that you had it all like, and I changed it to love. That was the biggest.
I feel like there's something really deeply, there's like even more issues that I have to work with, out with myself, that I put like and not love. It didn't even occur to me. Julia had been so sure it was an actual song that she'd gotten to work before our meeting. She'd sketched out a melody and sung it to Joe on his answering machine. They played it for me.
Okay, yeah. All right. This is going to be a rough rendering of the opus. Yeah. Okay.
I loved you, and you loved her, and I sort of loved.
loved her, 'cause I love everything you love. And then she stops loving you. And glory hallelujah, somehow you start loving me. And I don't know why I love you, I just do. I really do. And it doesn't do me any good. In fact, it does me bad. And you're oh so gone, and I'm oh so sad.
So yes, in theory, I knew all this. That music was important. It transforms words, unites the universe together. But I'd never actually seen it happen in front of me.
Come up with some more interesting.
I cannot believe that's the one that you choose. But then when you were singing it, it was like the words were like flying off the page, and there was like pixie dust on them or something. Like a magic spell had actually trapped it with a wand. And it makes total sense now after hearing it that should be the one.
So now the three of us had written a song about the other three of us. Over the next week, we finessed the lyrics, tweaked the melody, and recorded the song. It seemed obvious who should get the first listen. And no, I don't mean Anthony. That'd be crazy. I mean Phil Collins. Can I play my song for you? Is that okay? Yeah. I don't want to put you on the spot and make
I would like to hear it. We've been
really
talking about it.
Okay, cool. And you just be honest.
Okay.
Oh, okay, here it goes. So I played in the song. I'll skip the part you've already heard and the bridge and jump right to the end.
Now it's just the three of us. The names may have changed, but the sorry facts remain the same. That I love you and she loves you. I'm okay with second best. Just love her more and love me less. I don't know why I love you, I just do.
Well, there's some great stuff in there. You know, I really like, what's the line again about doing me no good, in fact, it's doing me bad?
It doesn't do me any good, in fact, it does me bad.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Really?
And afterwards, the line that says, and you're oh so gone. I laughed when I heard that. You're oh so gone and I'm oh so sad. I mean, it's just really smart.
I can't believe it. And it's so nice of you.
It's not being nice, I just like it. I mean, I would easily have said, hey, not for me, you know, but I heard it and I thought there was some it's very funny, it's very clever.
Thank you. Well, that's what I mean, though, about how, like I told you, I was trying to write all these, like, crazy concepts and conceptual ideas, and then the one that seemed to work was just the one that's how I feel.
Yeah.
Do you think he'll come back?
I hope so, because you obviously do feel a lot for him, so.
Oh. Do you think I'll ever stop feeling the way bad like I am now?
Well, but you kind of, you know, you kind of like feeling bad, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's something.
Yeah. You know, so I don't think you really want to get over it. I think you're kind of enjoying it. So that's kind of a dilemma you have to sort out.
You really have me pegged. It feels like important or big or something. Like, it feels like I felt so much for him when I was with him. And the only way to still feel like that strongly about something is to not let it go. I would love to be the person who just, like, he meant nothing to me. But instead, I'm the person who's like, okay, I'm going to write a breakup song and play it over the airwaves. And, you know, like, it's so, I've like, lost all my cool.
Well, you know, I don't see it like that. No,
really?
I think you're just addressing something you need to address. And this is getting, amongst other things, getting it out of your system, you know. You've had the satisfaction of actually getting something tangible that you can play.
Yeah.
You know, out of this relationship.
That's true. But I don't you sometimes wonder, like, is it better to have the song in the end or the relationship?
Oh, no, it's probably better to have the relationship. Yeah.
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 That's the problem.
That you don't have the choice.
Now that the song is done, it's really hard not to wonder if Anthony is going to hear it. I'd like to say I've gone back and forth on whether I even want him to, but the truth is, of course I do. Everyone I talk to, from my best friend all the way to Phil Collins, says he'll listen. And yes, if the roles were reversed and it were me, I definitely would. But I know Anthony. If anyone could resist listening, it would be him. You're just going to have to trust me on this one. Which doesn't mean I think he'll never hear the song. I can see him keeping a copy of it, in some box stuffed with mixed tapes and copies of SAT scores, so that he can listen to it one day when he's ready. I picture him 40 years from now, an old man, living in some house that I'll never see, which breaks my heart. In my head, he doesn't look like a real old man, but like a young one wearing stage makeup. I imagine him sitting down to finally listen, on the CD player that people make fun of him for still having. He loads it in and hits play. He listens to the entire song from start to finish, and when it's over, he plays it again and again, until the tears are running down his face.
Dr. Phil, winner of the 2008 Third Coast Festival Gold Award. The story was produced by Starley Kine and edited by Alex Bloomberg.
Thank you so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And thank you, Alex.
Well, we've come to the end of the 2008 Third Coast Festival broadcast. In the past hour, we've heard some amazing examples of how, in difficult times, times of economic crisis, war, personal challenges, radio can do so much for us. It informs, it transforms, and dare I say it, makes us laugh. It is such a flexible, pliable, imaginative medium, taking us through the aftermath of a devastating earthquake, the psychology of transplants and transformations, a young woman's journey out of the foster care system, and a rock poet's sympathetic advice for the lovelorn. Now, you cannot ask for more than that. But if you do, radio will be there, expanding, changing shape, growing with you, and bringing the world to your ears in new forms. Thanks for joining us for this hour of the 2008 Third Coast Festival broadcast featuring the winners of the Richard H. Driehaus Foundation competition.